Well, good morning. The committee will come to order. Welcome to the Senate Tax Committee. It is wonderful to have you all as partners in our work in this committee. There is so much work to be done in the next several months, and welcome to you all. I'd like to say that it's an honor to serve in this committee. I've worked on the committee for 8 years. For those of you that don't know, I'm Julianne Ortman, and I have served in the Senate since 2003 from Carver County and Scott County. I live in Chanhassen with my husband and our 4 kids, and taxes mean a lot to us. I think this committee is going to look at what the tax burden is in the state of Minnesota. We're going to work hard to provide some solutions, some reforms. There's great opportunity for all members to truly participate, for the general public to participate. And we look forward to the conversations. It seems to me that in the tax committee, it's a great luxury. We can learn as much as we want to learn. It's like being in college. And there are experts and practitioners that will come and testify, and they'll talk to us about their experiences, and we can learn from them and from each other about the great state of Minnesota. And so I'm looking forward to learning with all of you, learning from all of you. Let me also say we have incomparable staff in this committee, and I'll ask them all to introduce themselves as we go around the table, but we have exceptional staff that will be working in this committee, and they and I are here to serve the members and to the general public to help them work through these tax issues this year. I also want to say thank you to the many members who have written notes of congratulation and encouragement for me as I take on this new role. It's a big one. And to those especially that have been chairs of this committee previously, it's an honor to serve with you. You leave some really big shoes to fill. I'll do my best, but I'll also be looking for you to assist me as mentors in the work that I do. So today we're going to have a general overview of the Minnesota tax system. We're going to have a review of the jurisdiction of the committee. But first I'd like to start with some introductions. And for those of you, you'll see that we have some additional guests in our committee, other senators that would like to participate in these conversations. There were so many interested in serving on this committee because these are such important issues for the state and for their residents that I have invited them to join us at the committee table whenever they'd like. They will be welcome here to participate in the conversation. As we all know, they will not be voting members, but that's not really the heart of service in this committee. There are so many other parts to service, and so I've invited them to join us at the committee table anytime that they would like. So with that, Senator Skoy, I would appreciate it if you would begin with committee introductions.
Hi. Senator Rod Skoy from North Central Minnesota.
Madam Chair, no voice.
Oh. Senator Roger Chamberlain, thank you for your service. We're excited to have you here on the committee.
Mystery guest.
Gretchen Hoffman, Senate District 10.
John Marty, Senate District 54.
Warren Limmer, Senate District 32, and nobody knows where Senate District 32 is. It's Northwest Hennepin County and a few houses in Wright County.
Thank you. We'll come back to Jamie in just a moment, but if you'd like to go next, Michelle.
I'm Michelle Allen. I'm Senate Counsel, and I deal with income and sales tax issues.
Good morning. I'm Senator Jeff Michelle. I represent the rough western suburbs of Edina and Bloomington.
Senator Larry Pogemiller. I'm a Minneapolis district, the University of Minnesota, and the River Place area.
Dave Senjum, Rochester. I represent Dodge and Olmsted counties.
Tom Bach, Senate District 6, which is a large piece of Minnesota's Arrowhead, the upper hillside part of Duluth, all of the north shore of Lake Superior, and kind of the north part of the Iron Range.
Good morning. I'm Julie Rosen. I'm honored to serve District 24, which is Martin County, Faribault County, all of Waseca County except the town of Waseca, all of Blue Earth County except the town of Mankato, and Wantowan County.
Hi, I'm John Howe, representing Senate District 28, which is the great counties of Goodhue, Wabasha, and Winona.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Senator Ted Daly, representing Eagan and the eastern part of Burnsville, a non-voting member, but very happy to participate.
John Carlson, Senate District 4. Thanks for inviting us. We're happy to do anything we can to help lift the load.
Thank you.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members. Jeremy Miller, Senate District 31, and I'm a non-voting member, just a guest. Thank you. Nice to be here.
Well, you're all very welcome members of the committee for all of our hearings. Thank you for coming today. And if I could ask some folks to come from the back and introduce themselves, maybe you can join us at the table on one end or the other, but we have some great staff, as I said, and I'd ask them to introduce themselves. Why don't I begin with Jamie?
Hi, I'm Jamie Yost, Legislative Assistant for Senator Ortman.
Hi, I'm Beth Cadoon. I'm Committee Administrator for the Tax Committee.
Jack Paulson, I work in Senate Council on Research, primarily property tax aids and credits, property taxes.
I'm Susan Von Lush. I'm the Fiscal Analyst, and I also do runs on income taxes.
Craig Janis, Senate DFL Research.
I'm Adam Stubblestead, the committee page.
Dan Nickelberg, Republican Research.
I'm Joanne Zoff. I'm the other counsel to the committee. I work on property tax, tax increment and financing, and other local developments and minerals taxes.
Great. Thank you all for introducing yourselves. And as I said, we're here to serve the members of the committee and the members of the general public and the folks that have business before this committee. So anything that we can do to serve you, we would be happy to do. I want to say the first risk I took in becoming chair is to set up the seating chart. And let me just say that putting Senator Marty and Limmer together was kind of a risk, I admit. When I served on the Judiciary Committee with the two of them in my first term, I'll never forget one night late in the Judiciary Committee. We extended the committee deadline. We were there very late. And they had me laughing so hard at the committee table. The tears were rolling down my face. I couldn't stop because we had sat outside of the committee room and had cheese popcorn and realized that we had orange fingers in the committee and all the bills were orange. And we giggled and laughed, and I would just say you might want to keep an eye on Senator Limmer and Marty. It's a risk, but I know I really...
Especially Senator Marty.
Especially him. That's right. It'll begin right away, I'm sure. Well, if we could, committee members, we will begin with an overview of the Minnesota tax system, which will include a review of the committee jurisdiction, and we will begin with Ms. Von Mosch, I believe.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members. My name is Susan Von Mosch, again, for the record. We're going to be looking at the committee's jurisdiction today. I'm going to be talking about tax revenue collections and trends. Then Michelle will do a review of income taxes, corporate taxes, sales, and other taxes. We're going to touch very briefly, time permitting, on the spending side of the tax committee, tax aids and credits, and then we're reserving for another day an overview of property taxes. The committee has jurisdiction over all bills relating to taxes, which is the revenue side, and tax aids and credits, the spending side. And our jurisdiction also includes the budget reserve, tax increment financing, fiscal disparities, and payment in lieu of taxes. And in your handout, there is a much more extensive list of the items that are within this jurisdiction. This chart looks at all state revenues, and it looks at it from two different perspectives. The all funds perspective includes roughly 39 funds that support all of state government operations. The general fund is the largest of these funds, and it's also the fund that is required to be balanced every biennium. And because of that, it tends to be the focus of our budget deliberations and a lot of public attention. The revenues for fiscal year 2012 and 13 for all funds is $62.2 billion. And state taxes accounts for 60% of these revenues. The federal grants accounts for 27.6, and the non-tax revenues is 12.4. The state's general fund has total revenues in fiscal year 12 and 13 of $32 billion, and state tax revenues accounts for 94% of the general fund revenues. We're going to look at each of these in a little bit more detail. This chart represents all funds revenues for all funds, and from a tax perspective, it accounts for $36 billion. Now, that is a $6 billion difference from the amount of state taxes that are in the general fund. And where that $6 billion comes, or where it goes to, or what accounts for it, is two-thirds of that is raised by motor vehicle taxes, motor vehicle sales taxes, and registration taxes. And that's that money, which is about $4 billion, is deposited into transit and transportation funds. 20% of it is from the 2% healthcare provider tax and the insurance premium tax, and those funds are deposited into healthcare access account. 9% of it is additional sales tax revenues that are attributed to both the constitutional amendment for outdoor preservation, water, and the arts, which passed several years ago. And there's also some sales tax money from that goes into the Game and Fish Fund and Natural Resources Funds. Now we're looking at the general fund state tax revenues by type. $30 billion for fiscal year 2012 and 2013. You can see here that we, as a state, rely primarily on income taxes, which accounts for 52% or $15.7 billion in this fund's revenues, and sales taxes, which is about $9 billion in revenues. The other taxes account for about $5.3 billion. And the other taxes, in comparison, account for a relatively small portion of general fund revenues. In addition to state income, sales, and corporate taxes, Minnesota relies on property taxes. Property taxes have been the primary source for local governments, cities, counties, towns, and school districts. In 2001, the state did enact a state general fund levy, which is that information is included in the total property tax figures here. The dollars that correspond with the percentages on this chart are that the total taxes, and this is in fiscal year 10. This information is from the Department of Revenue. They have an extensive amount of information on their website, and so a lot of the information that I'm presenting is available on their website, and we can talk about that later if you want. This chart represents $23.5 billion in fiscal year 10. Of that amount, $7.7 billion includes the property taxes, which are both the state and the local property taxes. $6.5 billion is income taxes, and $5.1 billion is sales taxes. And just to round out the pie, I apologize, I should have included these figures in the chart also. Other taxes is $3.4 billion, and corporate tax is $663.5 million.
Ms. Von Mosch? When you have time, will you put those numbers together for us and just distribute it to the members of the committee so we have that to go along with that? I think that would be helpful.
Yes, Madam Chair, I will do that.
Thank you.
Madam Chair?
Senator Bach.
Madam Chair, as long as Ms. Von Mosch is doing some work, maybe a 10-year trend line on what's been happening to this pie chart. It seems like we're getting more and more dependent on property taxes. I think it would be kind of interesting to know how that pie's been changing over the last 10 years or so.
Thank you, Senator Bach, and sure, Ms. Von Mosch will do that. That is absolutely one of the things that we need to be talking about in this committee is not just how our tax base has changed, but the volatility of the tax base, and we're going to talk about that as well. Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Von Mosch, maybe one other instruction, and that is on property tax wedge on that graph, is it possible for you to give us a breakdown of how it property types are a percentage of that property tax? Corporate, industrial, residential, that type of thing.
Madam Chair, Senator Limmer, I believe it's possible to do that. I'm seeing a nod from Mr. Paulson over there. So we will also break out the property by type, yes.
Thank you, Senator Limmer, for the question. You know, I just learned, looking at some documents, that we have over 25 property classifications. And that's something we may want to look at as well. So, Ms. Von Mosch. Okay.
Thank you. This chart is...
Madam Chair.
Senator Skoy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, there is the property tax working group that is actually one of their charges is to look at the number of classifications and if it could be simplified or not.
Senator Skoy, do you serve on that working group?
Senator Limmer and I are serving on that for the Senate.
Thank you. And Senator Skoy, what is the expected report date? Is there a report coming that we can put on our agenda?
Well, Madam Chair, I'm pretty sure there is, but I wouldn't know when that is. We are meeting this Friday, so I think we're planning on, maybe Senator Limmer can help me. I don't remember if it's once a month or whatever it is.
Madam Chair.
Senator Limmer.
We aren't expected to get a report from the Property Tax Working Group until December of this year. So Senator Skoy just was recently appointed, so he's catching up. The problem is that we've got 5 months that we have to react to certain economic issues in the state. And I'm not so sure if the legislature will be waiting around for their report. I think they'll be interested in the findings, but we have our job to do, and we have a specific time to do it. So it's probably good for the committee to get well-versed in property tax.
Agreed. And thank you, Senator Limmer. That will be a focus of our work, and I'm hoping we won't be here in December trying to resolve the budget deficit. I'm reminded that the statutory deadline is May 23rd, so hopefully we can abide by that and learn from whatever the working group can provide us in the meantime. And I know we'd all welcome whatever suggestions and their participation in this committee if they'd like to. So, Senator Senjum.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And to the witness, of the property tax, 32.9%, do you have an idea of how much of that is state business property tax or versus local property tax? I mean, might it be 10% of that 32% or 5% or
it's less than
40%? You know, any amount?
Madam Chair, Senator Senjum.
Ms. Van Mosch.
I don't have it written down here, but I believe that the total for this amount is $7.7 billion, and I believe that about $700 million is the state, or somewhere in that ballpark is the state portion of that. So the bulk of this is local property taxes. But I will check that. I'll confirm that, and I'll get back to you with a final number on that.
And Senator Bach.
Well, Madam Chair, in that property tax piece, I'd be interested in knowing, as long as we're going to kind of look at some breakdowns, what percentage of that are school taxes? You know, we did a major tax reform in 2001 that reduced the amount of property taxes that were going to schools, and I think with the voter-approved levies, that's been increasing. So I'd be interested in knowing what percentage of the property taxes paid in the state are actually going to fund schools and how that's been trending over the last decade.
Well, Madam Chair, that is possible to get all this information to the committee.
Yep. Thank you, Ms. Von Mosch. And what we'll do is we'll schedule at least one full meeting, if not more, to reviewing our property tax structure and what the current is and maybe what some of the trends have been to give members an even more in-depth view. Senator Howell.
Madam Chair, I think... What Senator Bach is asking for needs to be dived into a little bit further on that. Not only do we need to know how much the trend line is going on the schools, but where those taxes are being driven from. Is it from residential, commercial, industry, utilities? And so I think when we look at that, we need to find out that also.
Thank you, Senator Howe. It's clear this committee wants to talk about property taxes. So I assure you we will talk about property taxes, and I'm sure we'll have a great conversation. Ms. Von Mosch, would you continue, please?
This chair is borrowed from the department, or this chart is borrowed from the Department of Revenue, and it shows a very broad overview of the mix of tax collections from both state and local taxes, and it goes back to the 1960s, so it's very in-depth. But some of the things to note here would be that in the early 70s, the Minnesota Miracle shifted the major source of education funding in the state from local taxes to state aids, and this reduced property taxes, and it increased the income and sales taxes. So you can see how that was a major realignment of taxes. And then in 2001, that was when the state created the statewide property tax on businesses and cabin property, and it increased state aid to schools to replace the general ed levy. So there again was some shifting going on there. There's a lot behind all of these numbers, and if you I also have the ability to pull out some of the detail in any of these numbers if any members wants me to do that. And this chart shows state and local revenues combined as a percentage of personal income. This is called the price of state government. And I didn't realize until this morning that the percentages weren't showing. So I will also get you a revised version of this chart with the percentages actually on the chart. And in the meantime, I'll just tell you what a couple of them are. Fiscal year 10 numbers, which are actual numbers, state and local government revenues in total were 15.3% of personal income. That this means that for every dollar of Minnesota taxpayer income, 15.3 cents would be paid to state and local government for the services that those governments provide. And in 2010, this total spending number is forecast to drop to 14.9. Now, looking at it just from the tax perspective, and this line is not on this chart at this time, I'll also add that. In 2010, state and local tax collections are 10.7% of personal income. And in 2015, this figure is forecast to be 10.6. And that is the end of the fiscal part of the presentation, so I'll turn it over to Michelle.
Thank you, Ms. Von Mosch. And Ms. Allen.
Madam Chair, once again, Michelle Allen from Senate Council. And despite the committee's desire to talk about property tax, I'm going to talk about the individual income tax. And just so that we're all on the same page starting out, what the taxpayer comes across when he or she is filling out her form is to determine what is federal taxable income. That is the starting point. We don't start from zero in Minnesota. What federal taxable income is basically federal adjusted gross income after all of the deductions and the exemptions. Once that number is determined, the taxpayer can then go on to finish filing his or her taxes. But because we start with federal taxable income, we have an issue that the legislature has to address usually almost every year, and that's federal conformity. Whenever Congress acts to change the federal tax code, the legislature has a choice as to how to respond. Do we include that in the amount of federal taxable income? Does Minnesota conform as to a date certain and then add back those amounts? And those are choices that this committee will have again this year because there are pending issues before Congress. And as of right now, we are only conformed to March 18th of last year. So any federal act that affects taxes will then have to be discussed by the committee.
And on that point, members, we will have a hearing on our first federal conformity bill next Thursday for taxes payable for 2010. So we'll want to move swiftly on that conformity bill. Senator Bach.
Madam Chair, is it your intent to try and pass a conformity bill early?
Yes, Senator Bach, it is. So that since it's 2010 tax treatment, we want to make sure Minnesota taxpayers have an opportunity to avail themselves of the same deductions that others across the country will have. So, yes.
So, I'm sure we'll see a tax bill on the floor relatively early in the session before 1st of March?
Yes, I think that is the intention. We'll have that hearing next Thursday. We'll see how it goes. I mean, it's up to this committee as to whether or not we're going to move this bill forward and make a recommendation that we take it up on the Senate floor. Ms. Allen.
Madam Chair, there are some areas, large areas, where Minnesota has not conformed in the past, and the ones that the committee will hear often about are bonus depreciation and Section 179 expensing. Instead of doing what the federal government has done in terms of allowing assets to be depreciated sooner, Minnesota requires an add-back procedure so that only 20% of an asset's value can be deducted at the same time. So now that we have federal taxable income, we're going to go to additions.
Senator Scoy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Would you touch briefly on the estate tax conformity that we're not in conformity with the federal estate tax? Can you just give me a little rundown of where Minnesota is with regard to estate tax differences?
Madam Chair, actually, do have a slide a little bit later on all about the estate tax, if that would be okay to wait.
That'd be fine. Thank you, Ms. Allen.
Back to the additions and subtractions. The additions, other than the bonus depreciation in Section 179 expenses that I mentioned, the other additions are mainly as a result of our choice not to conform exactly to federal law. For example, the teacher expenses deductions have been something that has not been conformed to in the past. The other things that are additions are things that are required under federal law. Interest income of other local governments and states are things that we require to be added back. And then income that's not taxed under Minnesota law, those expenses that would normally be deductible are required to be added back. Subtractions come in three main categories. One, they're ones required by federal law constitutionally, like interest on U.S. bonds. And then again, the ones that are a result of not conforming to federal law. And then the rest of the subtractions, which we have a lot of, are policy-driven subtractions. And those include the educational expenses. We also have a subtraction for military pay and National Guard and Reserve duty. There's Job Z-related subtractions, organ donation expenses, AmeriCorps awards, and charitable contributions for non-itemized. There are a few others, but that kind of gives you a sense of the gamut of what we're dealing with.
Madam Chair.
Senator Lindley.
One quick question. You talked about the conformity with federal tax law. Is that the and Minnesota has a choice to engage in the same tax provisions as the federal government? Is that the reason why the state of Minnesota has no capital gain treatment for sale of capital holdings?
Ms. Allen.
Madam Chair, Senator Limmer, yes, we follow the federal treatment. So whatever the capital gains would have been that are included in federal taxable income would automatically be included in Minnesota taxable income.
Did I hear you right? You said that Minnesota has a capital gain tax treatment?
We do not have a separate capital gains treatment, but to the extent that capital gains are included in federal taxable income, that gain would then be taxed as Minnesota taxable income.
Ms. Allen, are you saying that that's something that's factored in when we determine our federal adjusted gross income? Is that what you're saying?
Madam Chair, that is correct.
It's taxed as regular income.
Senator Loomer?
Madam Chair, I'm confused on it because I thought that Minnesota, when you're filling out a Minnesota tax report, that for tax purposes in the state of Minnesota, a taxpayer could not avail himself of a special capital gain treatment for the state of Minnesota as you would in the federal tax form.
Ms. Allen?
Am I correct?
Madam Chair, Senator Limmer, there is no specific treatment as to capital gains, but to the extent that a taxpayer has included the gains as income in federal taxable income, it would be taxed by Minnesota, but it would not be taxed under a specific separate system like the federal system is.
And, Madam Chair, the income that's created by just a capital gain in Minnesota, is that treated as ordinary income for tax purposes?
Madam Chair, Senator Limmer, to the extent that it is income and there isn't an offset for depreciation or, and it's exclusively a gain, then yes, it would be income.
All right.
Madam Chair.
Senator Bach.
Or loss.
That's correct, Senator Bach. Ms. Allen.
Once you've figured out what the actual income is, then we move on to what the tax is. And as you can see up here, Minnesota has four different brackets and three different rates. The lowest rate is 5.35%, and the mid rate is 7.05%, and then the top rate is 7.85%. Now, the numbers that you see in the brackets are something that are changed every year by statute. They're annually adjusted for inflation. So very often whenever we see an income tax bill dealing with rates, whether they're going up, down, creating a new bracket, taking a bracket away, you will see a change to the statute as to the amount of the bracket. All that's doing is bringing it up to date with what law should be because we don't necessarily change the statute. It hasn't been changed. So the one in the book does not show the actual adjusted inflation rate.
Ms. Allen, does that mean with the income amount, that's what gets adjusted for inflation in the statutes?
Madam Chair, that is correct. For example, in the first bracket and the first rate, 5.35, for a married joint, that will go up to $33,770 for this year. Most likely next year, depending upon the inflationary factor, if we're assuming that it increases, that number will be higher for the following tax year.
Members, I would say that's the first I'd really noticed that. And I think it's really worth noting because incomes in Minnesota aren't really going up. And this may be a change in the trend, and we may want to look at this inflation factor, the automatic inflation for income as it's taxed under Minnesota law. You may want to look at that.
Madam Chair.
Senator Bach.
Former Governor Plenty would have viewed your comments as a tax increase. But I guess my question, Madam Chair, and if Council doesn't have it, maybe the Department could get it. What percentage of Minnesota returns, or how many are there, that are in that third-tier bracket? I think we have just over 2 million returns filed in the state. I want to say 2.4 million returns. I'm wondering how many Minnesotan households are in that third tier that make over married joint over $134,000.
To that point, Senator Bach, I think it'd be good to see all of them in all of the different brackets and to see how much revenue is collected in each of those brackets by those numbers of taxpayers. And I've seen those charts before when we've done runs on tax proposals. I know they have the information. So I know the committee will want to look at that, and we should have a full conversation about it, not just about one particular rate, but maybe the whole system. Senator Rosen and then Senator Howe.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And to that, perhaps how a particular bracket has maybe fallen, the trend of decreasing, or there is that perception that the wealth is leaving the state. So we need to know if there is a particular bracket that is steady or decreasing, too.
And Senator Rosen, you mean as to the number of taxpayers mm-hmm. in those rates that are actually
right.
paying taxes? I think that'd be interesting to study
over
that
a
as
a period of time,
right? And as a function of our population, too. Have
right.
has that been going up, and has it followed? I think the Freedom Foundation has just done a study, and I haven't seen it yet. But we members may want to look at what they've been tracking, which is they've been attempting to track exactly that: how many taxpayers are leaving the state. Mm-hmm. And is there a correlation with our tax code?
That's
so
right.
You may want to look at that. Senator Howe.
Madam Chair, I'm just wondering, especially for some of us newer members on the committee, if we could just give a brief history and the rationale for having four brackets.
Senator Howe, I'm sure we'd be happy to get you that information. I think that if you look at the Taxpayers Association books that we'll have next month, they show the history of all of our taxes in the state of Minnesota and how we got to where we're at now. But I think when we talk about income taxes, if folks in the staff would look to that to say, what's the history of how did we get to the three brackets from How far back would you like to look, Senator Howell?
Well, just actually, I'm just looking for maybe just right here a little brief rationale and history of it.
If you have that information, great. If not, then we'll bring it back when we talk more about the income tax. Ms. Allen, is that information available, or maybe we can come back later today?
Madam Chair.
Senator Skoy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Ms. Allen, I don't remember, does the tax incident study also talk about the effective tax rates on these three tax rates? Maybe we could have a little information on that. I think the tax incident study does talk about that.
Yes. Senator Skoy, I believe you're correct, and we will have that as well. In fact, if you look in your packets, there were quite a number of significant reports that were posted on the website, made available to members of the committee and to the general public, and that includes the tax incident study from March. It says March 2011, so I guess it'll come out, but it's available on the website, the most recent one, and there's a whole list of them if you look in your packet as to many of these studies that are available. But we'll come back to that, Senator Howe. I think it's a good suggestion.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Ms. Allen, would you like to continue?
Madam Chair, just very quickly in response to Senator Howe's question, the tax Minnesota Tax Handbook, which is prepared by
the
department,
the
which Senator Ortman referenced, it gives the history of all of the taxes, including when they were enacted. The first enacted rates were 1% to 5% in 1933. And then there's a very lengthy history from then on that I would be more than happy to provide for you, or it is in the tax handbook, which is available on the department's website.
Thank you.
So now that the taxpayer has figured out how much tax is owed, we move on to credits. Credits are a dollar-for-dollar offset against income tax liability. There are two different kinds of credits, refundable versus non-refundable. A non-refundable credit can only be used to reduce the taxpayer's liability to zero. A refundable credit can be paid to the taxpayer in addition to what they owe. As a result, when you see estimates for non-refundable versus refundable credits are always scored more expensively.
Ms. Allen, on the refundable credits, are they refundable regardless of whether the taxpayer has any tax liability at all?
Madam Chair, that's correct. Even if a taxpayer has zero liability, they could still get a refund of a credit. And that often happens with those who are in the lower income brackets with the working family credit.
And Ms. Allen and members, I think that Senator Hahn has said that he's hoping to look at some of those refundable credits in his committee, the ones that have a health and human services aspect to it. We may want to look at those refundable and non-refundable credits in this committee. It has a very big impact on our revenues in the state of Minnesota. Senator Rosen.
No, thank you, Madam Chair. To that and to a couple slides back, how are we going to will we be getting a list of the policy-driven subtractions and a list of these credits at some point to take a look at? How is that information going to be coming to us at what time or what?
You know, Senator Rosen, I haven't set up a hearing on that specifically, but we will be talking about that, and maybe we should have a separate hearing on that. If that's what you'd like, then we'll work on that. Senator Bach.
Well, Madam Chair, if Senator Hahn takes a look at some of the refundable credits, who's and they're reduced or maybe eliminated, whose spreadsheet will they be carried on? The spreadsheet of the Tax Committee? Or the spreadsheet of the Health and Human Service Committee?
Well, Senator Bach, I'd say that's to be determined, and I don't know that Senator Hahn has said one way or the other about how he's going to treat them, but he is going to look at them in his committee because many of them are generated in our Health and Human Services policy. So as a matter of that policy, he's going to look at that, and we'll have some ongoing conversations this year about that subject. But who's paying taxes and who's not and who's receiving a refundable credit, those are questions that are proper in both committees, I believe.
Well, Madam Chair, I think if any of the committees are going to be reducing or increasing the income tax that the state collects through the use of credits, that should be in the jurisdiction of this committee and it should be carried on this committee's spreadsheet. That was just my suggestion. I mean, I would have been very reluctant when I was chair to allow other finance bills to be carrying implications relative to income tax interactions on their spreadsheets. I've never been one to allow the finance committees to raise money without the jurisdiction of the tax committee. In fact, I remember there was a point in time where I think Senator Pogemiller was the chair and Senator Krinke was, or Representative Krinke was the chair in the House, where they passed some language into law that a fee was considered a tax, so that all bills that raised fees at one point in time in law were required to come through the tax committee before they could go to the floor of the Senate. I believe that was repealed later.
Well, Senator Bach, at this point, Senator Hahn and I are getting along pretty good, and I'm thinking that we're going to have it in here in the tax committee. But I know that he'll be looking at it as well. And our committee administrator, Ms. Cadoon, was right to remind me that we are going to have a tax expenditure hearing coming up, and that will be joint with the finance committee. So that will be upcoming in our agendas. So look at that, Ms. Allen,
Senator Ortman. Just moving along, although I could certainly provide to the committee a list of all of the credits, just some examples are the K-12 education expenses credit, the dependent care credit. We also have a credit for military service in a combat zone. Some of the new credits that were enacted last year were the small business investment credit, known as the Angel credit, and the historic structure rehabilitation credit. Those are all refundable credits. The non-refundable credits include the marriage penalty credit, which allows for taxpayers who have two working members of their household to not be penalized for both bringing in income, and gives them a credit for that. There's also the long-term care credit and the credit for past military service. One of the distinctions that will come up in this committee is the difference between a credit and a subtraction. Or a deduction. A subtraction only lowers a taxpayer's taxable income, where the credit lowers a taxpayer's liability. So just to compare apples to apples, if you have a $1,000 credit, you're going to get $1,000 worth of tax liability reduced. If you have a $1,000 subtraction, and the comparable value of a subtraction is equal to the marginal rate multiplied by the amount of the deduction. So if we're going to assume the $1,000 subtraction for a taxpayer in the middle bracket of 7.05, their benefit is going to be $70.50 compared to the $1,000. So that's why when you see a credit versus a subtraction on a revenue estimate, there's a huge cost difference. Then moving on to the alternative minimum tax. Similar to federal law, Minnesota has an alternative minimum tax. The big difference is that a lot of the deductions that are allowed and in the regular individual income tax are not allowed, but the rate is lower. It is only 6.4%, and it's a flat rate. And the taxpayer pays whatever is the higher amount of liability, whether it's the AMT or the individual income tax liability.
And Ms. Allen, yes. We just adjusted the alternative minimum tax amount or the rate in Minnesota, did we not?
Madam Chair, we did not adjust the rate. We adjusted the brackets, and we adjusted them for inflation. So in 2006, what was happening is because the brackets were not adjusted for inflation, more and more people were being subjected to alternative minimum tax liability. By adjusting them annually for inflation, less people would fall under that and then would just pay the regular income tax liability instead.
Thank you.
Then moving on to the corporate franchise tax, as you see, the rate is 9.8%. The starting point for the corporate income tax is the federal corporate income tax. And it only applies to C corporations, so it does not apply to S corporations or partnerships or any other pass-through entities or insurance companies or credit unions. And similar to the individual income tax, we go through the same process of additions and subtractions. And in the corporate franchise tax is a little bit different in that the additions are similar, but the subtractions have kind of a nature of their own. The big ones that you will see that affect big corporations are the dividend received deduction, there is a dividend received deduction at federal law, but the Minnesota one is different. So Minnesota law requires the corporate taxpayer to add back the federal deduction and do the Minnesota deduction instead. And that is available to corporations where 80% of the dividends are received from another corporation if the recipient owns 20% or more of the stock. Similar subtractions are the foreign source royalties, and that's a subtraction for 80% of royalties from foreign operating corporations. And then the foreign operating corporation subtraction is for domestic corporations that are part of a unitary group that have at least one taxable member in Minnesota. And they, if their income is such that 80% of it is foreign active business income, that can be deducted, and they won't pay Minnesota tax on that.
Members, I'm sorry to interrupt you, Ms. Allen, but members, we already have several bills that have been introduced relating to the corporate franchise tax. Senator Michelle has a bill. Senator Langseth has a bill. I've introduced the counterpart to Representative David's bill from the House. So there, we will have hearings on this corporate franchise tax. We're going to have some folks come in to some experts in the field to talk to us about our corporate franchise tax and the single sales factor and the weighting and the foreign operating corporation treatment in the state of Minnesota. So this will become a focus. It'll be an early focus of this committee. I'm assuming that Senator Michelle is going to pass his bill through his committee and send it on over in the next couple weeks. And so that and the other bills will all have hearings here. Senator Bach. Well,
Madam Chair, there certainly is a perception that Minnesota has one of the higher corporate tax rates in the country, a published rate, 9.8%. I'm just wondering when you figure in all the subtractions and the credits, really what is our corporate income tax rate? It certainly is something less than 9.8. What's the real number? Because I know when you look at Wisconsin's individual income tax versus Minnesota's, when we dealt with the tax reciprocity issue that's in the news today, what we learned on tax reciprocity was Wisconsin has lower rates. I mean, if you looked at the rates alongside each other, it looks like your income tax liability for an individual in Wisconsin would be lower than Minnesota. But when you actually plug income into the model in both states, even though Wisconsin's rate looks lower, your tax liability at the end of the year is lower in Minnesota because we have a more generous set of deductions. So I'm just wondering if our rate of 9.8 is really more of a perception issue, or is it do we really have a really high rate? So if council doesn't have it, maybe we could get that number of what is the real net rate after all the credits and subtractions are figured in.
Well, and Ms. Allen, is that enough? Do you use the term effective, or do you use actual rate? If you're going to factor in all of that, is there a term of art for that so that we can refer to that again in the future?
Madam Chair, I believe effective rate would be the appropriate term, and that's something that we could look into and provide.
So the effective corporate franchise tax rate. And Senator Michelle.
Well, and Madam Chair and Senator Bach, this is a conversation that I think will go on for maybe throughout the session, but there's a sticker shock to the 9.8 number, and I think you have been sensitive to that over the years. That's high. There's a sticker shock from the 9.8 number, but and perhaps the opportunity that you point out is that because also in our tax code are a number of exemptions, deductions, ways to make that effective number go down, that actually might make it easier in terms of cost for us to lower that high sticker shock number. So I hope you'll see that as an opportunity as we go down the road here.
Well, Madam Chair, Senator Michelle should read Senator Langseth's bill. I think Senator Langseth is making that very argument that the real rate is significantly lower than that, and I think some testimony on Senator Langseth's bill might be very helpful for the committee if we had somebody from the department come in. You know, there's going to be a lot of talk about corporate taxes, so let's just, you know, at some point I hope we can just get the department in here and talk about is it real? I mean, is it real that Minnesota has a extraordinarily high, maybe the third highest corporate rate in the country, or is it a perception that we do? I think we all need, before we start making decisions about making changes relative to, you know, some of the revenue stream the state has, we should know for sure if the perception is just that, or if it's, or we really do have a problem.
And Madam
Senator
Chair,
Michelle.
I think both the answer to Senator Bach's question, is it real or is it a perception? We want both of those answers to be no. That in order to go forward and try to grow some jobs, we want the actual rate to be lower, and we want the perceived rate, the perceived cost for doing business in Minnesota to be lower. So I look forward to working with Senator Langseff and others. This will be a great topic for this committee.
Thank you, Senator Michelle. I think that whether it's real or perceived, businesses are acting accordingly, and we need to be fully aware of that, that whether they act because it's real or perceived, they're still acting. And I think Senator Langseth's bill is interesting. We will ask Senator Langseth to present his point of view on this issue. If exemptions are necessary for our businesses to thrive here in Minnesota, then we better start looking at the exemptions and whether or not we should continue granting exemptions to what I think is an extraordinarily high rate or a non-competitive rate. I think we need to look at that, because if we're trying to invite businesses to expand or start here in Minnesota, if our rate is keeping them out, we should look at that. And if in order to succeed here you have to get an exemption, we need to talk about the whole package then. And I think Senator Langseth is inviting that discussion. I welcome that discussion, and I think it'll be a good one. Senator Skoy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I waited for Senator Michelle to say the magic word jobs before I brought this question forward. But as we try to promote jobs in Minnesota and grow jobs, the question that occurs to me is, what percentage of the job growth in Minnesota is projected to be from C-stock corporations? And where is the job growth? I hear all the time that 75% of the job growth occurs from smaller startup businesses, which primarily tend to be partnerships or family operations or individuals or S-stock corporations, which this corporate tax has absolutely no bearing on at all. So if there was some information about that, I would be curious also.
Well, and to your point, Senator Skoy, we've had conversations in this tax committee before about how regressive the corporate franchise tax rate is, because it's the consumers often that pay for that, and it's passed down the chain. And so there are other reasons to look at that corporate franchise tax. Job growth is one of them. But then when you have corporations here in Minnesota, they often do business with the small businesses that you're talking about. So I hope we look at tax relief for all businesses and all taxpayers in the state of Minnesota. This is just one area we're going to be discussing and hopefully looking at the potential job benefit or job growth benefit and the other benefits for reducing this tax if we can.
And Madam Chair, we also should look at what businesses actually need to be successful, because in my recollection, a lot of times the businesses that come before the legislature are concerned about workforce and community, and some of the studies that I've seen has the tax rate quite low on their list of priorities.
Senator Skoy, I'd say, here, we want these businesses to be successful, and we are going to have that conversation here. And I have been working to invite a site selector to come to the committee to talk about how Minnesota fares when compared to other states in all of those different aspects of consideration.
And Madam Chair.
Senator Michelle.
I think Senator Skoy raises a really important point that, again, I think you will see throughout this session, if we can get the numbers, but if it's true, and I think we basically take it as a truism, a tax truism, that small businesses aren't impacted by the corporate tax, but it's the individual income tax that a lot of their income gets driven through, that's what gives us, I'll say us, that's what gives some people some pause about discussions about raising the income tax right now. That could harm those small businesses, those job creators that you were rightly concerned about. So there's an interesting mix at all the tax rates here, and I don't know what the governor's going to end up doing with his what he's talked about, but I assume that issue may be teed up sooner as opposed to later.
Thank you, Senator Michelle. And I'm going to just say that this is why there are so many people interested in what's going to happen in this tax committee. I think it's going to be an interesting place to hear that debate. Senator Scoy.
Thank you. And Senator Michelle, I agree we should look at that. And as we had this discussion about the history of the tax rates and the classifications, as we look back just a few short years to the mid-90s, Minnesota's highest tax rate was 16%, with an effective tax rate of about 11%. Currently, the effective tax rate is about 5.5%, I think, if you review the tax incidence study. So we've done a pretty good job of reducing the individual income tax rate in Minnesota over the last few years. Some of us might argue that unsustainably so, but that will be decided, I suppose.
Thank you, Senator Scoy. We've got Senator Howe and then Senator Bach.
Madam Chair, I think your suggestion of bringing in a site selector is very good. To Senator Michelle's point, you know, when they're looking at a corporation looking at siting a business, they probably look at the top rate. They probably look at the stated printed rate. Do they dive down into what the exemptions are for a given state? And if they do, are exemptions viewed as more of a temporary or unstable tax thing than the actual rate that's stated at the top? And so I think perceptions matter. I think realities matter. But how are these corporations making those decisions? And what kind of what are we trying to drive from a policy standpoint on it? And I think so those are very good discussions. And I would I'd appreciate it having a site selector come in.
Senator Howe, that is a great point. Thank you for making it. Senator Bach.
Well, Madam Chair, to Senator Howe's point, I remember just recently we lost an IBM expansion in this state, Minnesota company. And Senator Howe, you know who we lost it to? We lost it to Iowa, whose corporate tax rate is the highest in the country at 12.5%. So, I mean, I wouldn't underestimate the bean counters in these corporations. I think they know when they're making a decision, they understand what the published rate is and what the real rate is. But, Madam Chair, one thing I'm interested in relative to the corporate rate and all this discussion we're going to have about it is kind of what percentage of the corporate franchise tax that the state collects is paid by retail C-Corps. Because I think the truth is businesses are here retailing because there's customers here and people want to buy things. And I think lowering the corporate tax rate for a retailer will do nothing to expand and help that retailer grow jobs. Retail is what it is. Now, there certainly are other sectors of the economy where we're doing something with the tax rate may somehow benefit us, but you know, and I don't know the answer, if a large percentage of the corporate franchise tax is being paid by, well, let me just use Walmart, for example, from Bentonville, Arkansas. If we reduce Walmart's corporate tax rate and then that money flows to the spreadsheet in Bentonville, Arkansas, how do we as members of this committee assure that that money is going to get reinvested in our state? Because, I mean, retail just is what it is. And you can't, I don't think you can do things to stimulate additional retail. There's either customers there or there aren't. And there's only so many dollars that Minnesotans are going to spend on retail. So I think we need to be careful going forward when we talk about this, about to what extent we can impact economic growth by tinkering with the corporate tax. And because I think there's a perception there, but I think if we're going to do that, we just need to make sure that it accomplishes the objectives that we hope to.
Senator Bach, I appreciate that, but I think we don't want to try and compare just at that one face value. Do I want to compare just the corporate franchise tax in Minnesota to Iowa? No, I don't think that's a complete picture. I think we are responsible for the overall tax burden of Minnesotans on all levels, and I hope that what we'll do is take it to that next level and say it's not about one tax, it's about the overall tax burden, and is it a climate that invites business and encourages growth and allows prosperity in our families, in our businesses, and allows us to provide the services that Minnesotans expect. So it's a much more complicated question than one tax. Unfortunately, you know, we have to take it in a straight line approach, and we're going to take it one tax at a time, but I hope members will be mindful of the overall burden and the overall services that we provide and pay for with that burden.
Madam Chair.
Senator Marty.
On that point, I think it's a good point that you look at the overall thing, but I think Senator Bach's point is if the tax cut is going to Bentonville, Arkansas, and we're going to raise so-and-so much money to fund government, then Minnesotans would be paying more taxes, whether it's property tax or whatever. So in other words, I think, yes, it may be the overall thing you're interested in, but which ones are being paid and who's paying them is a big part of it. And if a lot of the corporate tax cuts would be going to people in other states, that's not really a plus for Minnesotans. So I think your point is legitimate. I think his point isn't counter to that, though.
Well, and Senator Marty, I appreciate that. When it comes to the corporate franchise tax, however, we have some of the biggest employers in the state of Minnesota carrying this burden in ways that their competitors don't in other states. And so I think we need to look at that because we don't need, you know, when Lockheed Martin leaves and IBM doesn't expand, that's in part because of our corporate franchise tax. And that has huge repercussions in our economy. And so I think, yes, we may end up extending a tax credit or a reduction in rate to corporations elsewhere, but I think we need to be mindful of all these employers in the state of Minnesota. Ms. Allen, hopefully we'll continue on with our overview.
Madam Chair, just in the interest of time, I will mention that there are credits. A lot of them are similar to the ones for individual income tax. A list can be provided to the committee. When we go through the tax expenditure budget, you will see each and every one of them. So moving along to the next slide, on apportionment, which the chair also mentioned we would talk about more later, Minnesota uses a three-factor formula based on property, payroll, and sales. But as you can see from this chart, that number is that's going to change in 2014 under current law so that it will be a single factor of sales only. Currently for the tax year, the filing tax year right now, 2010, you have an 87%, 6.5, and 6.5% split. So the bulk of it is still sales, even right now. Minnesota also uses combined reporting and has for almost 20 years. So that means for unitary businesses that are complex corporations and have multiple subsidiaries or other corporations within it, each corporation will calculate its tax liability based on the total income of the unitary group. Moving on to the corporate A, alternative minimum tax, it's very similar to the individual income tax in that there are less deductions allowed, and the rate is a 5.8%. And again, the taxpayer pays whatever is the higher liability. One other thing that falls under the corporate franchise tax is the minimum fee. And this is the one thing that also applies to S corporations and not just C corporations. And you can see from the graphic on the slide what it's a flat rate fee based upon the total of the property, payroll, and sales. Now moving on to a whole new tax area, sales and use tax. The presumption in Minnesota is that sales tax is due for the sale of all goods within the state unless they've been specifically exempted, but only services that have been enumerated in statute are subject to tax. As you know, very likely, the rate has recently increased as a result of the constitutional amendment that was passed in 2008, so the overall state rate is 6.5% plus the 3.75, and that will be in effect to 2034. But the 3.75 does not go into the general fund. As Ms. Von Mosch discussed, those funds go into separate legacy funds that are distributed having to do with outdoor heritage, clean water, the arts, and the parks and trails funds.
Ms. Allen, can you just comment about there are special provisions with that constitutional amendment. My understanding is that if we adjust the sales tax in Minnesota, if we, say, expand the base, that tax would not be extended to the expanded base. Is that a correct understanding?
Madam Chair, that is correct. It is within the statute and the Constitution that to the extent a major change happens to the tax base, not something small that's probably not going to affect the dollars, the commissioner is directed to statutorily change the rate so that the same number of dollars would be going into those funds as have been projected, and then round it to, I believe it's the thousand.
Thank you. Madam Chair. Senator Marty.
Madam Chair, on that point, clarification. In other words, if we expanded sales tax to services or something, a broad category, so you would say a 30, 40, 50% increase in sales tax revenue, would the legacy sales tax expand to that and the rate go down, or would the legacy sales tax stay on the other things and not go up or down?
Ms. Allen.
Madam Chair, Senator Marty, the way that it is worded, it is permissive as to what exactly would happen and how the commissioner would affect the rate. It is most likely that the overall rate would go down in the event of an expansion, or attraction, I assume, would create a an increase.
So Madam Chair, just
we would not have separate rates on different items.
I understand. So, but if we raise the sales tax base by 50%, so the legacy, would the legacy sales tax stay on the same base as everything else, and those it would go up by that 50%, and then the commissioner would have the authority to, well, would propose legislation to reduce that 3.875% by 50% to make up for it?
Ms. Allen.
Madam Chair, Senator Marty, a lot of it would depend on the actual wording of the statute that's changed and how the bill that's passed addresses that issue, because presumably the rate would not go down below the 6.5% unless that is something that is addressed in the change. But the goal is to keep the concern at the time was that in the event of a base expansion, there would not be a windfall to all of these accounts. So the intent was to keep all of them more or less whole, not to take away from them or to give them more.
And Ms. Allen, and the reason I brought this up, Senator Marty, is that I think that there's been this misunderstanding that we've raised it and this same tax rate, this new tax, would apply to everything and that it would basically overwhelm any kind of adjustment in our sales tax. And I think it was interesting when I learned that when we adopted the constitutional amendment, we actually provided for that. So there's some flexibility going forward. I think we'll have the ability to direct on that to the extent that we decide to make any changes in the sales tax, and I wanted members to be aware of that.
Madam Chair, I was aware that we had allowed for that in the amendment. I wasn't sure if we allowed for it if we expand the base, its base expands as well and the rate goes down, or if it's that we don't expand the base of that.
Right. And Senator Marty, I may have caught Ms. Allen off guard here, but I just wanted to make sure that members had the same understanding I did, and we'll talk more about that when we talk about the sales tax, if that's all right, Ms. Allen. But I think the sales tax is definitely one that we'll be looking at in future hearings. When I read how Minnesota compares, when you add in all of the local sales taxes that Minnesotans pay, we're definitely the highest in the region. We're 7.22%, I think, is the number. So definitely the highest in the region, and I think that's another way that we could look at our tax burden and also affect every Minnesotan with some reforms in that area if we can. So I'm sorry, Ms. Allen, going on.
Madam Chair, as the other half of the sales tax is the use tax, which is a complementary tax on any goods that are brought into Minnesota, stored or used here, unless the Minnesota sales tax has been paid. As has been discussed by this committee and by the department, the sales tax or the use tax compliance rate is very low. It's approximately 20%, I believe was the last number. Moving on to Nexus, constitutionally, Minnesota can only require a business with a physical presence in the state to collect and remit the tax, and that's an issue that you probably will also see in this committee as to online retailers and to a certain extent, catalog sales. Moving on to the next slide is exemptions. Exemptions are divided basically into four main categories. You have general exemptions that apply to the actual products, such as food, clothing, drugs, medicine, prescription eyeglasses. Every purchaser who goes to make that purchase will not pay the sales tax. Some examples of exemptions that apply to businesses are capital equipment, although capital equipment has its own strange hybrid in that it is an exemption. The tax is still paid and then refunded to the payer. There are also is exemptions for telecommunications equipment, farm machinery, and there are individual construction purchase exemptions for specific projects. Minnesota has over 100 exemptions currently in statute.
I'm sorry, Ms. Allen and members, I hope we will look at those exemptions. From my point of view, our picking winners and losers from the state capitol is something we should be concerned about. It has a very big impact on our economy and on Minnesota taxpayers, and I think we need to own up to that and talk about these exemptions and the special treatment that is given to certain taxpayers, and maybe there's good reason for it, and I think we should just review that and make a policy-level decision about where we should be with exemptions.
Other exemptions also has to do with who is the purchaser. Some of the, for example, nonprofit organizations, school districts would be exempt, but not local governments. Hospitals and nursing homes are exempt. And then who the seller is can affect whether or not there's an exemption. For example, isolated or occasional sales, fundraising sales by nonprofits, and then admissions to school events, artistic events, the zoo, those sorts of things.
I don't know if we did or not.
Moving on to the streamlined sales and use tax agreement. This is something that has come about with a collection of states. Currently, there are 24 member states. 20 of those are full members and 4 are associate members, so they're getting close to half of the states that are involved in this agreement. What Streamline requires is a uniform definitional system so that all the states are defining things in the same way. That there is a state-level administration of the taxes so that entities aren't paying to state sales tax to counties or individual cities or things like that. That is not something that has traditionally been a problem in Minnesota. Most of the general sales taxes are collected by the Department of Revenue. There also is uniformity in major tax-based definitions so that often you will see that an exemption to the sales tax that wants to exempt a certain product, but we already define it a certain way because of Streamline. And if we exempt that product, we would have to exempt all of the products within that category. And oftentimes that isn't what the committee has chosen to do. The whole point of Streamline is basically to make it easier for businesses to comply. And currently Minnesota has been declared out of compliance in 2 areas with the streamlined sales tax, and that relates to our taxation of ringtones and also that we don't have a statutory provision related to requiring 30 days notice before the rate change. So that's something that the committee will likely be addressing.
Ms. Allen, could you repeat that again? Yeah, which areas are we not in conformity?
There are 2 areas. One relates to ringtones. And that,
like the ringtones that you buy on...
Madam Chair, that's exactly correct. Minnesota doesn't impose sales tax on digital audio works, but we do impose it on ringtones, and the streamlined definition includes ringtones in those digital goods. So right now there's sort of a dichotomy going on that has been raised before in the committee, but because it is a cost item, it is not something that has eventually been adopted.
Ms. Allen, I may have some constituents at home that might not want to pay sales taxes on that, but we'll look at it
well,
anyway.
Well, Madam Chair, we are already paying sales tax on ringtones.
Oh, we are.
But not on the other goods. So
I
the
see.
Decision is, do we exempt ringtones and include them, or do we put everything subject to tax that falls under that category? And then the other issue is that there is no statutory provision, although administratively it has always occurred that there's at least a 30-day notice of a rate change. But we do not have a statute that addresses that. And the governing board has found Minnesota out of compliance because of that.
Thank you.
Moving on to local sales taxes.
Senator Skoy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Allen, other times when we've talked about streamlined sales tax, there have been a little bit of discussion about how that number 24 is going to grow. What status? Is there like 8 states that are kind of working along on this, or what's the national outlook for adding states? What are other states doing at this point in time?
Madam Chair, Senator Skoy, there are 44 states that participate in the discussions. There are 20 that have become full member states, 4 that are associate states, and I believe it's in the neighborhood of 6 states that have at least introduced legislation relating to adopting the agreement.
Thank you.
So on to local sales taxes. Statute currently prohibits the imposition of a general local sales tax without special legislation. So this committee has seen a lot of requests for those. Currently, 23 cities have a general local option sales tax. Cook County has a 1% sales tax, and Hennepin County has the ballpark tax of 0.15%. In your packets, you should have a page that looks like this, and this is prepared by the Department of Revenue. This lists all the local taxes, most of which are general sales and use taxes, but you'll notice a few other ones, including lodging taxes. Cities already have general statutory authority to impose, without coming to the legislature, a 3% lodging tax, but that has to be used to fund tourism. So there are several areas that have additional lodging taxes. That includes Minneapolis, St. Paul, Rochester, Duluth, St. Cloud, Bloomington, and Bowabic. There are also food and beverage taxes in 7 cities, and additional liquor taxes in addition to the state overall liquor tax in 3 cities. That's Bloomington, Minneapolis, and St. Cloud. And there are admissions taxes in 4 areas. There's also 4 counties have the transit tax, which is a 0.25% rate, and that's in Hennepin, Ramsey, Washington, Anoka, and Dakota County, and that money is specifically dedicated to transit. The outstate counties have the authority to impose a 0.5-cent sales tax for transportation purposes if they have a referendum.
Madam Chair?
Senator Bach.
Madam Chair, I'm just in to counsel. This document from the Department of Revenue, I'm wondering if it's complete, and before we kind of take this as gospel, and the reason I ask is I know Duluth has 0.75% on food and beverage, and that's what's paying for their portion of the recent deck expansion, and I don't see it on here. So I'm just kind of wondering, I mean, I'm sure that's missing. I wonder if there are other things missing, and maybe before this gets distributed too widely.
Madam Chair, the reason why the Duluth food and beverage tax, that isn't collected by the department. That's why it's not included on there.
So, Madam Chair, Ms. Allen, are there others that aren't administered by the department that aren't on this sheet?
Madam Chair and Senator Bach, yes. Including all of the, most of the lodging taxes, those are not collected by the department.
Ms. Allen,
the 3% ones that they have statutory authority for.
Is it possible for us to supplement this list with a list of those that are administered by the local government?
Madam Chair, yes.
Thank you. And members, I'll just let you know we're going to finish at 10 o'clock on time, so we'll hopefully allow Ms. Allen to continue. Senator Senjum.
Madam Chair, Ms. Allen, and maybe just to tag along with Senator Bach, now, I know Rochester has an authorized food and beverage tax. It's not been implemented yet, but is it the same reason that's implemented by a different department? I didn't know that, quite frankly.
Ms. Allen.
Madam Chair, Senator, it would depend on if it's actually in place. A lot of the food and beverage taxes are not collected by the department, and I can get a list of which ones are and which ones are not. I can give you a list of all of the taxes that have been authorized by the legislature, including ones that have not been imposed.
Right. So that's the third tier, is there are some, Ms. Allen, that are not administered by our department. There are some that are authorized but not actually implemented. So on all three levels, I think the members would like to see that if that information is available. Thank you.
Moving on, just in the interest of time, the next slide is about the state general levy, and I don't want to discuss that very long because it deals more with property taxes, but that is a statewide property tax that falls only on commercial, industrial, and seasonal rec property. The levy for 2011 is $800 million, and that is statutorily required to increase annually. And as you see by the slide, the division is 95% CI property and 5% for the seasonal rec. And then moving on to the next slide, which is the estate tax. Estate tax, it has been decoupled from the federal estate tax. So what we use basically is federal law that was in place in 2001, including the taxable value of an estate. Minnesota taxes the taxable value of an estate exceeding $1 million. The rates vary depending upon the value of the estate from 9% to 41%, and we have exclusions for transfers to a surviving spouse. Life insurance proceeds are not included, and neither are charitable bequests. So that, of course, diminishes the overall value of estate. There aren't a lot of estates that are actually end up being subject to the estate tax in Minnesota.
Thank you. And then, Ms. Allen. Senator
Senjum. Chair, Ms. Allen, I don't know if you know the answer, but on estate tax, it's hard to be competitive on an estate tax, but you know, if you're a fairly wealthy person, you're going to die. I mean, you might want to pick your place where you die. Are those tax rates generally true across the country?
Ms. Allen.
Madam Chair, Senator Senjum, the tax rates for the estate tax vary greatly across the country to the extent that some states have no estate tax. And it really doesn't matter where you die, but where the property is. So okay. If you have property or assets here in Minnesota, even if you die in Florida, you're still going to be subject to the estate tax
thank you.
Here.
Thank you. And Senator Skoy, just one moment. When we get back to it, Ms. Allen, maybe you could just finish up with slides 24 and 25, and then all the rest relate to property taxes, and we can take that up on a different day. Senator Skoy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Allen, do you know what the dollar amount is for the 41% rate? Where does that start?
Madam Chair, Senator Skoy, I don't know off the top of my head. I believe it's in excess of $10 million, but I will double check.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Allen.
Moving on to insurance premium taxes, the general rate is 2% on gross returns for domestic and foreign insurance companies. There are companies that are not included. That's the fraternal benefit societies, and then the comprehensive health association plan premiums are not subject to that tax. And then these that you see listed here have lower rates than the 2%. They vary from 1% on mutual property and casualty companies to the 1.26% for the ones with assets of $1.6 billion. And then we also have a surplus lines tax of 3%. The retaliatory tax is one that applies to out-of-state insurance companies, and they have to pay either our tax or the tax that their domicile state would require Minnesota companies to pay. So they pay the higher of the tax. So when you hear the term retaliatory tax, that's usually what it's referring to. And it doesn't apply if the state doesn't have a retaliatory tax scheme. And then finally, this is not an exhaustive list by any means of all of the other taxes that exist. These are just most of them. The first few, like cigarette and tobacco taxes and fees, do go into the general fund, and so does alcohol tax. And the motor vehicle taxes, the sales tax, the leasing tax, and the fuel taxes are all dedicated either by the Constitution or by statute. And then the Minnesota care tax is also dedicated to the healthcare access fund, and that's generally a 2% tax on providers and also wholesalers of prescription drugs. As I mentioned, there are other taxes, including gambling taxes, waste hauling taxes. The handbook that we discussed earlier has a wonderful exhaustive list of all of them, their rates, and their history.
Ms. Allen, do all of those taxes then have jurisdiction here in this committee, even though they might be related to transportation or related to health care, the provider tax? Do they ultimately come back here for consideration?
Madam Chair, all of those do fall within the committee's jurisdiction, although some of the policy issues of the other ones may be shared with other committees, for example, health care or transportation.
Ms. Allen and Von Mosch, Ms. Von Mosch, we really appreciate your presentation today and all that the work that you've put into this. Members, with the list of taxes we've seen, there's plenty for all to work on over the next few months. And I invite you all to participate in all of these tax discussions. We'll get to the questions in just one moment. One other final thing for me is we are working on these agendas. And you're all welcome to contribute. If you think that there are folks we should hear from in this committee, I invite you to let Ms. Cadoon know, and we will consider adding them to an agenda. We're going to take very quick questions from Senator Howe and Senator Bach, and we're going to try and finish on time. Senator Howe.
Well, Madam Chair, I think Senator Bach makes a great point that we do need to look to our neighbors to see what they're doing. And I'm sure Senator Michelle is going to dig into this, but, you know, Iowa has a sliding scale corporate tax. And their top rate is, in fact, 12%, but it starts at 6%, Madam Chair, which is 38% lower than our corporate tax rate. So I think it's important to dig into the facts, and I appreciate you taking consideration of my question because I do want to be data-driven in this committee.
Thank you, Senator Howe, and I have a feeling we're going to get into this a lot deeper than we have in the past, and I invite that. Senator Bach.
Well, Madam Chair, I misspoke earlier, and I want to apologize to the committee for that. When I referenced the statutory language that describes a fee as a tax, and I think it might be helpful for all members of the committee to review statute section 645.44, subdivision 19, where just in part, Madam Chair, it says, for the purposes of applying the laws of this state, a fee, charge, or other similar term must be treated as a tax for all purposes, regardless of whether the statute or law names or describes it as a tax. So a fee is a tax in Minnesota. It's in law. So I think, Madam Chair, the question I think you need to wrestle with is whether bills that contain fees in them should come to this committee or not before they go to the floor of the Senate. And I guess that's kind of your decision. It's your committee jurisdiction. But, I mean, the law is pretty clear.
Senator Bach, I think it, you know, take it to the highest level, which is these are the burdens that are imposed on Minnesotans for, you know, obtaining government services. And for me, the distinction really is about users and whether users are paying or overall taxpayers should pay. And I'm interested in hearing all of that here in the committee, if the members are as well. We should be looking at the overall burden and the overall price of government. But I do think that in many ways it's a distinction without a difference.
If you could.
But on a final note, again, I ask you all to let us know if there are folks that you think we should hear from in this committee. For next week, we will not have a hearing on Tuesday in observance of Martin Luther King Day. The schedule for the Senate has shifted, so a Tuesday looks like a Monday, and so we will not be having a hearing on Tuesday. We'll be back on Wednesday and Thursday. And as I said, our first bill will be up on Thursday. And a final note, I've invited all of the senators and all of the staff to join us in the conference room for some rolls and coffee, and we can continue the great conversation we've begun today. With no further business, this committee is adjourned.